Welcome to Look to the Moon podcast, bringing together two friends with stories that need sharing. Join us, Jodie and Nicole, as we navigate life after loss, discussing topics around birth, trauma, and baby loss, and providing a safe space for others to share their stories. Hi everybody, welcome to episode 14 of Look to the Moon podcast. This is part two of Kira and Luca's story. So if you haven't already, dial in to listen to episode 13, where Kira shares her experiences and the loss of her beautiful baby boy, Luca. In part two, we discuss her loss and trauma in a little bit more detail and some of the ways that she has learnt or is learning to cope post losing Luca. So this is episode 14.
So sorry, I just need to nip to go to my daughter because she's screaming.
Yeah,
so
cut that down.
I actually had said to my girls as well, my door up here doesn't lock, and I was like, do not come here.
Oh. Yeah, well, Nicole's daughter, she's four, so she's probably more than capable of walking into that room. My daughter's only two, so she's sort of in baby jail, as we call her. She's still in her cot, so even if she did wake up, she can't escape.
Can't come in here, yeah.
No. No, she can't escape. But this is, you know, this just proves, you know, we don't really need to cut this out, because it just shows you what real life parenting and is. And, you know, I know that I feel like I'm a completely different person than I was before I had my daughter. And it's reading your story was quite strange, and that's probably the wrong word, but it seemed to blend mine and Nicole's story together.
I felt that too when I listened to both of your stories.
Because there's certain things obviously in there that I can't relate to. And there's probably certain things in your story that probably less so, but Nicole can't relate to. But there's just seems to, more so than other ladies that we've spoken to in terms of their stories, it seems frighteningly close in sort of experiences and outcomes and emotions and the way that, you know, you felt at certain periods of time. And when you said about being wheeled in for the first time in your wheelchair into the NICU, and you just felt this urge and just get to your baby. And I remember all the nurses kept saying to me, oh, your daughter's huge. Like, she's massive. And I'm like, oh, she's a full-term baby, you know. And it was like they'd never seen a full-term sick baby before. And we were in a ward with, I think there was four cots on our ward, and there was actually only three babies on the ward, and the other two babies that were there, I think, were born about 26 weeks. They were both very, very similar, so they were little tiny dots. And that's all I heard is, your baby's huge, your baby's massive, and, you know, like, full-term baby. And I'm thinking, they must not see full-term babies very often.
I don't think so.
But then do you remember when we looked at the statistics, Nicole?
Yeah.
Actually, the majority of babies in special care or in the neonatal wards are actually full-term babies, which we found quite surprising. I think it was about 60... Well, I'm going to have to fact-check myself. I think it was about 62%.
I remember listening to you guys saying that, and I was like,
this is crazy.
Because Luca was the only full-term baby in NICU at the time as well. He was the biggest, as I said, but unfortunately the sickest. And I think I had also, I had assumed, I didn't think full-term babies go to NICU. You know, I didn't think that. It just goes to show that there is no safe point.
No.
Absolutely no safe point.
Yeah.
No.
No.
And I think we've all experienced that, haven't we? That, my daughter was born at 40 plus one. So she was born the day after her due date, even though I was in labor with her for three
I know.
days. So I was coming up for thinking, oh, well, she's probably going to be born on her due date, and it went the day after. And that's 40 weeks. And then you had Luca at 38 weeks, 6 days. And what, you went into labor, Nicole, 23?
23. She was 23. She was born. Yeah.
Yeah. And you think, oh, 12 weeks. Brill. Yeah, I've got to the 12 weeks. That feels safe. And then you
Yeah.
think that I always remember, because I came off the back of a miscarriage, and then I conceived my daughter. So I was like, I still don't feel comfortable at 12
Yeah.
weeks. So, and then I remember it was like the anxiety was like a battery, that it was at like 100% the anxiety when I first found out I was pregnant, and then it was still quite high, and then that battery seemed to start draining the further I got into, and I feel like that it was wrong of me to get completely comfortable by the time I hit full term, because that's what I did. My anxiety had completely disappeared in terms of, I'm going to have a miscarriage, or every time I go to the toilet, I'm going to see blood. And then it all went wrong right at the point where it should all go right. And it's like you say, there's no safe point, which sounds scary if you're listening and you're pregnant. And
I know, I
yeah,
know.
and that's really, it really difficult. But it's don't get complacent. Always, if you think there's something wrong, get it checked out. Better to be safe than sorry, as they say. And if reduce movements or any pain or anything, please go and get checked out, for that reassurance.
So I obviously did then have a follow-up with the hospital 6 weeks later. My placenta was sent off to pathology. We had decided against a post-mortem on Luca, so again, I'm not sure if it's the case in the UK, but we were given the choice of whether we could go for a post-mortem or not. The state pathologist does have final say, so even if you say no, I don't want a post-mortem, the state pathologist may go ahead, might actually say, well, I do believe we should have a post-mortem. But we decided not to have a post-mortem because we essentially knew that Luca died of HIE. I'm not even gonna try and attempt to say a hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy.
No, that's a quite a good attempt, because I've never been able to pronounce either.
You know, I actually had to put that into Google, the voice thing on Google to list, because I was
How
like,
to
how am
say
I gonna say?
it? And
But we
Nicole's
knew.
better at those medical pronunciations than me.
But no, not for HIE.
HIE,
Oh, it's
HIE.
a hard
No.
one. Yeah, we all know what HIE is. That's fine.
Well,
I
for
know,
anyone
I
that
know.
doesn't know what HIE means, it is about it. It's all to do with brain damage with regards to like oxygen deprivation, and there's three scales: mild, moderate, and severe. So, stage one, stage two, stage three.
And Luca was stage three.
Because I when my daughter was born, they put her down at stage two, moderate HIE. And she went through the same process as Luca, that she went and had an MRI. And again, this is where I'm saying that the emotions and the feelings are very, very similar, when she had to be transferred to a different hospital to have that done. That was actually a bit further away. And my husband was allowed to go in the ambulance with her, because they didn't know how long it was going to take. But I remember them telling me that because I was wheelchair bound, I couldn't go, which it made me feel completely helpless just to be
Yeah.
sat there. And with the fact that my husband went as well, I was glad of that because then she had
She
him
had
there.
someone, but who do you have?
Yeah, and I
You
remember
know?
just thinking, oh, please just communicate with me as soon
The
as,
whole
you know,
way,
all,
yeah.
yeah. And my husband was really, really good with that, you know, oh, we've just arrived. Oh, right, okay, she's gone in. And so he sort of kept me informed, but I remember them coming in and, like, say, taking her cot out of the ward, which was so bizarre, and
Yeah.
not knowing where she was going. And yeah,
Petrified watching them leave you.
yes, yeah. And you think, well, they're in their safe place now because they're being looked
Yeah.
after. They're in the best
And
place they
I'm
can
with
possibly
them.
be. You know, you're there, you know, and then they just get they get wheeled off, and you think they're going in an ambulance, and the stress of the
Yeah.
journey and all of that goes through your mind. And you'll know that as well, Nicole, because your daughter got transferred,
Yeah.
you know, from a different hospital as well.
Yeah, she had to get transferred from one hospital to another for urgent bowel surgery. And she, even though Luna was born at like 23 weeks, they said that she was at really high risk of having a brain injury and having HIA. But after she was born, she didn't have any brain injury. She was very lucky not to have any brain injury, but because she was so tiny and so fragile, and like with any baby, the skull's not properly formed, but even less so when she's 23 weeks, there was such risk of her developing a brain injury after delivery, and with any handling or movement, she could develop a brain injury. So she was on minimal to no handling. So she wasn't like to be rolled or to be touched or moved or anything unless she needed like a little nappy changing or changing the little cot that she was in. We could just pick her up and hold her, and that was it. So then when they said that she needed to go for urgent bowel surgery, I just remember thinking, well,
Petrified.
you can't, because you can't move her. Like, no, like you're not allowed to touch her. But she obviously had to attempt to save a life, and she ended up having to have a emergency transfer to another hospital, like moved her from one cot into the ambulance cot, and then off the ambulance cot onto the next hospital cot, and then into a theatre room, into a theatre bed, and then have bowel surgery. And after that, she then developed stage 2 and 3 HIE on both sides of her brain, or because she was touched. And I just remember thinking, like, I managed to deliver this
Well, this
baby
doesn't make sense.
naturally,
Yeah.
like, and she didn't have any brain injury. And now, because of everything else that's happened, now she's got brain injury. And I
Yeah.
just remember thinking, like you say, like, it's you're so angry at the world for everything because, like, you've got no one else to blame, have you? Like, it's the
Yeah.
world's fault
Yeah.
because of what our babies are going through. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And even just the anger of being, you're not being able to hold your baby. Like that's the first thing we
Yeah,
should do as soon as our
like your
babies are
motherly
born
instinct,
is to
isn't it?
hold them.
On your chest. And that's how it all starts. It's how you bond. And I think like the biggest thing for me was, well, how am I going to develop a bond with her? Because, and same for you two girls, like your baby's not allowed to be touched for 72 hours because they're having cooling therapy. Like, and I remember this being quite a big thing for you, Jodie, wasn't it? Like developing a bond with your baby when they're in an incubator and you can't like naturally breastfeed them. We're all having to pump and then feed the milk. Like it's not the same. It is different. But yeah, it's the hardest thing. Like all three of us have watched our babies in NICU, and it's I like with Jodie, I remember like I was lucky that no, that's not the right. That's the really wrong word
I
because we were not
know.
lucky to
I
have babies
always
in
try to
NICU.
word
Yeah,
it
we
as
say this all
wrong.
the time, don't we?
Yeah,
We
I
say
know.
lucky and
I'm
in yeah, we
saying I was lucky
comfort
that I had
and
Jodie that had just had a baby in NICU, and that is not
no,
how
but I
you
know what you
live.
mean.
Yeah, we know.
But yeah, like I could message Jodie and she would understand how I felt, and like it's a complete other world. Like even as me as like an A&E nurse, well, ex-A&E nurse, not anymore, I'm in intensive care in that setting all the time. But when you're the patient or your child's a patient, like, oh my gosh, it's literally another world, and people that haven't been there are so lucky because it's the most awful place to be. It's
And
so
a good friend of
isolating.
mine had actually had twins a couple of months before Luca was born, and they were born at 32 weeks gestation, and they spent a couple of weeks in NICU. And it wasn't until weeks after Luca passed away that I actually sat with her and I was like, I am so sorry. that I didn't get what your life was when you were in NICU with your boys, with your twins. You know, we used to text and I'd be like, send us a picture. Yeah, how are they doing now? Oh, look, you know, or look at them in their little outfits. And I just, being a NICU parent is so hard. It's so tough. And like you said, you just don't know it until you're in it. And I
Until
actually,
you're
like that, I apologized to her for not being more supportive when she was going through it.
I think, yeah, and I think it's a naivety on other people's parts, and like you say, a lot of people take for granted if they've had a good or easy experience, and you know, and I'm glad people do have those experiences. Don't get me wrong. Of course, I wish more people had, you know, an easier time than they do. And but I think birth in general is not, it's not easy. And I think you can have everything go smoothly and it's still traumatic. It's the one, it's the most traumatic experience that a woman can go through at the best of times. And then when things start going wrong, I think Kira, you said earlier, it still doesn't feel like you're telling your story. It's like you're telling somebody else's story. I'm 2 years in and I still feel like I'm talking about somebody else's story when I relive these things. And I'm thinking, I went through that. That was me. That was me in that bed, and that was my daughter in that cot. And but it doesn't, it still feels surreal, like it's not, it didn't happen to us. And maybe you're always in denial and that never goes away, but I feel exactly like that still 2 years on, that it's not my story.
My therapist has said that that's our brain's way of trying to protect us by making us believe it's not our story. Yes, okay, we can talk about it, we can tell someone, and we've gotten a little bit used to telling our stories now, that the and the more we tell it, the less real it starts to feel then. But when she said it's your brain trying to protect yourself,
Makes
because
sense.
it was, and there was a lot, there's, you know, in the first, in the early days, there was a lot of a story I couldn't remember. And she said, again, that's your brain
Brilliant.
blocking that out to try and protect it. My GP has told me that I do have PTSD from that experience, you know. So when I hear, not so much nowadays, but when I heard an ambulance, my whole body would tense up and my heart would be thumping and I'd start sweating and I'd get a little bit dizzy. I One of the first times Craig had actually left the house, he left quite early in the morning. He was going to play golf, and I'd say it was probably 6 weeks after Luca had passed away. And he left to play golf, and the doorbell had rang, and I just assumed it was a Saturday morning, and I assumed it was the postman. So I was just like, oh, I'll leave it, it's fine. But then it rang again, and I was like, that's not the postman, because they wouldn't ring the doorbell twice. And I don't know why I didn't check my Ring doorbell to see who it was. So I just ran down the stairs, and my front door has like a panel of like fogged glass, but through that I could see yellow and blue, which would be, I knew it was a jacket of a policeman, a garda is what we call them in Ireland. And I opened the door and I dropped to the ground. I thought it was the police coming to tell me that Craig had died. My anxiety about something happening to someone else, because the worst has already happened, it can easily happen again. I honestly thought they were coming to tell me that Craig had been killed. Turns out there was an incident on my road a few days before that, and they had noticed we had a camera and just wanted to see my camera footage. But they had to pick me up off the ground and bring me into my sitting room and calm me down. And when they came into my sitting room, they could see Luca's urn and a photograph beside him, beside it. And so I think they, and I had obviously explained to them what had happened. So they understood. But my anxiety was and still is really, really bad. I know you spoke about this before as well, Nicole. Like I am on medication and stuff now. I'd never really suffered with my mental health before. And I'm actually on sertraline as well. And it took so much for me to acknowledge that I needed that. And I was prescribed a And then I went and collected it. And then I left it sitting there for weeks and weeks. And I knew I needed it then after. I just kept putting it off. And I don't know why. I just had this thing. I was like, no, I'm fine. I'll be okay. I'll get through it. But just that underlying worry of thinking something was going to happen to someone else. If someone came to take Mila and Gracie for a play day, I remember hearing sirens going off, and I thought, that's for Mila and Gracie, they're gone. That's after something's after happening to them. And then because Luca was cremated, so we have him at home with us in a beautiful butterfly urn, and he's in our living room. I remember then thinking, oh my God, if the house goes on fire, what am I going to do? I have to grab his urn. I'll have to grab Mila and Gracie. And is that urn going to be fireproof? And I just started worrying about these things. And I thought to myself, no, this house is going to go on fire. Like, we live in a new build, so I was thinking that can't happen. So these worries would come into my head, and then I'd try and calm myself down. And then 2 days later, a neighbor of mine, their house went on fire. So that brought my worries back up again. I was like, this. I just kept thinking the worst of everything. And that's when I was like, oh, I need more support. And that's when I started taking the medication. And I was worried that I would start feeling numb, or I'd feel nothing. But in actual fact, that's not the case. I still feel emotions, but it just gives me a clear focus. And when I start kind of getting these intrusive thoughts, I can bring myself back down again, and it can just give me more focus. I can tell myself, no, you're running away with your thoughts now. Let's come back to reality and what and the facts of things.
Just gives your brain that little bit of space to think of like your everyday normal thoughts. Because I remember my mind was just in over, like you've just explained, in overdrive constantly. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. Why did this happen? Why didn't that happen? And I just remember like holding my head, like, will you stop? Because like,
I'm
I've never been
exhausted.
so aware of my own thoughts ever in my life. And I've said this multiple times on the podcast, but I remember going to the doctor and saying, because I was a nurse when all this happened and dealt with a lot of mental health patients that say they have a voice in the head that's talking to them, telling them to do things. And I remember saying to my doctor, oh, I understand it now. Like when people say that they're hearing voices, like it's just your own mind. And then Richard got home and told Richard, he's like, yeah, you
Non-stop.
really shouldn't say that, Nicole, to the doctor. And I was like, well,
Well,
like,
I am hearing voices, it's
yeah,
my own, but it's
it's your own
non-stop.
voice, just constant, and it does not stop. And but I was the same as you, Kira. Like I wanted to go out because I wanted to try like and continue normal life because I had a child, like you had two girls, I had a girl at home. And I thought, I need to go out. She needs to, go to the park. She needs to go and play. She can't just sit in this room like we are, just sobbing and crying. Like she's got to get out. So I was very much, no, let's get out. Let's, everything's great. Da, da, da. Not that our baby just died. Oh, my daughter's crying again. And Richard is asleep downstairs on the sofa. He's been out drinking beer all afternoon. I'm so sorry.
My
I
God,
called that
don't
mom.
worry.
Oh,
It just shows the reality of
it
it.
shows the reality, but I think, like Nicole's just said about, and you just said, I've never suffered with my mental health before. You start to really empathize with others that you maybe didn't
Everyone.
understand before. Like, I've got a family member that suffers with their mental health, and they are extremely anxious, and that has stopped them working. And as they get older, their mental health gets worse and their anxiety gets worse. And I've always tried to understand, but I've never been able to fully understand because I've never experienced it myself. Some of the things that they have said to me in the past make so
You
much
now get.
sense. And it translates, like I still struggle with my mental health like now. And I just recently I feel like I've got a lot of other things going on in my personal life, and my ability to cope with things that I used to probably just take in my stride has become very different, and I struggle to cope with a lot of added stress. But the other day, we as a an extended family, we went out. It was actually on Mother's Day we went out. It wasn't for Mother's Day, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. It was for joint sort of parents' birthdays, and my brother booked it, and I don't think he realised it was Mother's Day. So we
That's
ended
such
up
a
going
man
out.
thing.
Yeah. I know, I know. He was like, well, because dad's birthday's at the beginning of March and mum's is in the middle of April, so like let's do something sort of in between the two, and I'll book a meal. And I was like, yeah, fine, no problem. And it happened to be on Mother's Day. And I can't remember who said to something to me, and they went, are you looking forward to going? I was like, no, I'm not. Like, because you know what I didn't want to do? Is sit there, and this is with my own family, and make small talk, because I felt that because I've been struggling and I've been stressed, and you know, if I'm not sort of feeling good in myself, I don't want to be around other people, because I'm now so exhausted, mentally exhausted, that I can't fake it. Like, I can't even fake it because I'm too tired to fake it.
And
So
faking it is absolutely exhausting.
exhausting. Oh,
Putting on
it
that mask
drains
is
you.
so exhausting.
And that's how I've been feeling. And I remember speaking to the family member that has this me these mental health issues, and I said, I just don't want to be around people. And they're like, totally get it. Totally get it. And I'm like, and this is what they've been saying to me for many, many years. And I'm going, I know how you feel, and I now completely understand what you've been telling me for so long. And you know, their mental health issue is totally nothing to do with, you know, birth
Birth
or trauma
trauma
or
or
anything like that, but the feelings are inevitably the same, and it manifests in the same way. So I completely understand, you know, the need. And what you've just said, and what Nicole has said to me multiple times about like the medication and the reluctance to go on medication, but how that clears your thought process, you know, it clearly is a step that does help people, even if they are reluctant to begin with. Definitely.
Now, unfortunately, as I felt myself getting a little bit stronger, I have recently suffered a miscarriage as well, and not a lot of people know this. Trying to conceive or going into that world after loss is a whole other story. Like the amount of thoughts that go through your head when you think of possibly having another baby after losing a baby. You know, I think, do I want another baby or do I just want Luca back? And of course I want Luca back. I do want Luca back. But I would like another baby as well. You know, I want to give Luca a sibling as well as Mila and Gracie. And then you worry about what other people are going to think of you for having another baby, and you worry about that they are going to think, if you do have another baby, oh, she's fine now, and then they might stop talking about your baby that you've lost. And so there's so much that comes with trying to conceive after a loss, or pregnancy after a loss, and babies after loss. But again, my counselor was so supportive, and she was like, Kira, they're not in your shoes. And if they were in your shoes, they'd be doing what you were doing. So stop worrying about what other people are thinking of you. And you have to just do what's right for you. And I remember, because I had had a C-section, the talking about trying to conceive in the future was brought up, but I had to wait a minimum of 6 months. And you know, I see different timelines on from different people's stories, but I was told 6 months. And I was also told as well that unfortunately we have never found out as to why I had a placenta abruption. So sorry, I've gone way back to the placenta pathology results. and they just confirmed that I had a placenta abruption. I had questioned that I have sudden onset preeclampsia. No, they said no. I had questioned the urine, the protein in my urine that time. They went back over it and they said it was such a small amount, and it was obviously retested again. The bacteria in my urine, I had wondered did I have some sort of infection. I was, they said no. I actually retrieved my placenta slides from my maternity hospital. That was quite difficult to get them. Nearly kind of had to threaten with legal action to retrieve what is mine, essentially.
Yeah, it is yours. Yeah, 100%.
And then once that was mentioned, they were like, okay, we'll send them, but they're at your own risk. If anything happens to them, you've damaged them. And I said, well, I'll take that risk, because what use
Yeah,
are they sitting in a hospital
exactly.
when what's the harm in me going and getting a second opinion? So I got my
Sure.
placenta slides shipped to the US, actually, to a placenta specialist over there.
Wow. And this was all off your own back on your own research, yeah? Wow.
I'm part of a support group on Facebook, actually, and it's for placenta abruptions. And I had heard of this particular specialist. His name is Dr. Harvey Kleiman. So I had sent my placenta slides over to him. Cost us about €500 to get them shipped over. And he couldn't explain why it had happened either. And I remember just being so focused on why did that happen? Like, there has to be an explanation as to why it happened. And I've never been able to find an explanation as to why it happened. But because there is no underlying risk factors, that's why they said, look, you could try to conceive in 6 months' time. And you will be, in a future pregnancy, you will be treated at high risk. You will be prescribed aspirin. As a preventative of it happening again, but it's not guaranteed it won't happen again. So just going into another pregnancy or trying to conceive after all that happening was so scary. In December, I had found out that I was pregnant. It was actually on Christmas Eve. I'd done a pregnancy test and it was positive. And then I went for a private scan at 7 weeks, and they had questioned, and when I say a private scan, it wasn't a maternity hospital, it's in one of those scanning suites.
Yeah.
They had questioned, are you sure you're right with your dates? And I was like, look, I couldn't be more accurate with my dates. There's no way my dates are wrong. And then they referred me over to the EPU a week later. And when I went there, they scanned me. And they were able to see a gestational sac and a yolk sac. And again, we were like, are you sure you're 8? At this point, I would have been 8 weeks. And I was like, I'm definitely sure I would be 8 weeks. And they said, okay, look, we'll give it another week and we'll bring you back and see if there's been any progress. And when I went back a week later, there was no progress. And so they had said that it was considered a missed miscarriage. I have looked into it, and from my understanding, it sounds like a blighted ovum. And I had asked them, is it considered a blighted ovum? But they said no, because I had a yolk sac, I had a gestational sac and a yolk sac, and actually a very small fetal pole. So it's not considered a blighted ovum then. It's a missed miscarriage. So I decided to go. The options of, what to do next were given to me, and it was like medical management or surgical management. And I chose medical management because I didn't want to go through surgical management. I felt that my cervix and my uterus had been through enough trauma, that it would be just easier, I suppose, to go for medical management. And it was actually the February bank holiday weekend that I was due to take the medication. And something that I hadn't mentioned, and when I was chatting to you, was my sister-in-law, so Craig's sister, and I were pregnant at the same time. So when I was pregnant on Luca, she was actually pregnant as well with a baby boy, and she was due on the 5th of May, and I was due on the 17th of May. I had Luca on the 9th of May, He passed away on the 13th of May, and Craig's sister had her baby, a beautiful baby boy, Bobby, on the 14th of May. So that, yeah, it's amazing to have him, but it's also a dagger in the heart because I see him, reaching his milestones, and I know that that's where Luca would be. Craig is his godfather, so his christening was the weekend of my miscarriage, so Craig couldn't unfortunately go to the christening. That miscarriage was that sorry, that taking the medical management was absolutely awful. Like the pain that I was in, it was so painful. The blood loss, the clots, like it was so traumatic. And then 2 weeks later, I was still testing positive. An ultrasound had shown that there was pregnancy tissue remaining. And so essentially, I had to have a D&C then back in the maternity hospital that I had Luca, back in theatre, back in the same theatre where he was born. And I was going in to have a D&C. And I remember just again waking up in that recovery room, just thinking, I've lost another baby in here again. And it's two very, very different situations and experiences, but it's still a loss.
Of course.
2 weeks after that D&C, I was still testing positive. I went in for another ultrasound, and there was still pregnancy tissue remaining. So I had to have another D&C. Only in the last 2 weeks am I now finally testing negative. So I was told on the 31st of January that I'd had a miscarriage, and it's now April, and I'm finally only testing negative. And you know, the statistics of 1 in 4 will experience loss, and I'm like, I'm 2 in 4 now. I've had two losses, and I'm very, again, like I said, an early loss and a neonatal loss. And again, my anxiety the moment I found out I was pregnant recently, I couldn't enjoy that. It was so tough. Like that, there was no ex like there was happiness when we seen the positive pregnancy test, but I was riddled with anxiety. I was like, this can I'm this I'm gonna lose another baby. I did have this gut feeling that something was gonna go wrong, but I kept putting it down to, well, of course I feel like that because of what I've been through. But I just, yeah, from the, I just couldn't believe it. And then I kept telling myself, no, you've been through enough heartbreak. There's absolutely no way you'll have another loss. But unfortunately, the world doesn't work like that. You
The world
know?
is very
And
unfair, and like you say, people take quite a lot for granted in terms of it, like you transport yourself back to when you were 24 and you had your first baby and everything went perfectly and all to plan, and you would never anticipate that in 10 years you'd be going through this grief and this loss and this trauma. And you know, and it's no one can predict what you're going to go through and what you're going to experience. And like you said, there was something in your gut, and it's your instinct is a massive, massive thing. It's like when Nicole said, right at the beginning, when you said you knew something was wrong and you needed to get home, you felt it, you knew. And a lot of people never experience that sort of gut feeling and gut instincts, and it's quite hard to control, but you have to trust
And
your
then
own gut.
there's gut instinct, and then there's a mother's gut instinct, and
Yeah.
that's even stronger.
Oh yeah.
I couldn't just I, and I still can't believe it. And even though we never got to see a little baby on in the ultrasound, and you know, life was created, and life didn't get to stay. And I did get a little bit of comfort knowing now that Luca has someone with him. You know, he has a sibling with him now. Because again, I remember at the time when Luke had passed away, because I had said I'd never experienced grief before, I was nearly envious of someone who has lost a baby but has lost somebody else, because, well, at least your baby, at least they have someone in heaven. I was like, who's gonna mind Luca? I remember actually crying to my mom one day, and I can laugh about it now, but I was like, Mom, who's gonna change his nappy? Who's gonna give him a bottle? You know, who's gonna look after him? Because I don't have anybody up there. But now I get comfort out of knowing that he has. Luca and his little sibling, I don't know if it was a boy or a girl, but they have each other now. Yeah.
And they will be watching you and thinking, my God, my mummy is a strong woman.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'm sure whoever's listening to this podcast when it gets aired, there will not be a dry eye listening to this. Because blown away. Like, I don't think I've ever heard me and Jodie so quiet. Like, you've just ran that podcast yourself. Like,
I do have a bit
you're
of a bad
amazing.
habit of talking and talking and talking.
No, but this
Manifest.
is for you. This is
Yeah.
your it,
Your
this is
time.
your platform to tell us and tell, anyone that's listening about you, about your family and about Luca and what you all went through. And it's, we always say enjoy, which is the wrong word. Then we always correct ourselves and say, we hope people find comfort in listening to other people's stories and, relate it does make you feel less alone when you can say, I felt like
100%.
that. I felt like
Yeah.
that. And, oh, I had those emotions. And, because you go through your emotions, you go, that's stupid.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
you
am I
think, no, that's
crazy?
not that. Yeah, I'm crazy. And you think, that's not stupid. That's not crazy. Somebody else is
Yeah.
feeling that way or has felt those emotions. And this is, like I say, this is your platform to hopefully help others as well, and, Luca will be proud that you are
Yeah.
brave enough to sit here and share your story and his story. And the place you're at the moment, you're still very fresh in your grief. You're coming off the back of another baby loss, and you've only just, what, in the last 2 weeks started testing negative,
Yeah.
and your mental health journey will continue to evolve. And you mentioned earlier about having a group of bereaved parents. Have you shared your recent loss with those ladies at that group, or have you kept your loss quite closed to sort of close family and friends?
So that group that I met with actually the other day for the spa, off of the sauna and the river dip, I didn't share with all of them. It was actually our first time meeting. One of the
Okay.
moms, I have been chatting to her on social media, and then we moved over to WhatsApp, and then we met up. So she knows about it, but the other moms don't know about it. And then when I remember myself and Craig, we went to one of those group support meetings, and Felicon, that support group, they support families who have had stillborn and neonatal loss. So I remember being in the car to Craig, and I was like, Craig, we can't talk about the miscarriage when we go in here, because that's not what this group is about. And then when we had gone in, this is the first time we've ever gone. So we've gone every single month since May 2024. It's on once a month, and every month it's absolutely packed full of heartbroken couples. But in March, there was nobody there. It was just myself and Craig and the two Felicon group leaders, as you call them. And we know them quite well now. Craig is actually really good friends with the guy who leads the group. And because it was just us, I was able to tell them, and I nearly felt like that was meant to happen. There was nobody supposed to be at this group that I could talk about the miscarriage, and I suppose I probably could have spoke about it as well, when other parents were there. But I just remember I kind of put myself back in my early grief days of losing Luca, and I was like, if I was sitting here back in May listening to someone who's speaking about going through a miscarriage, I wouldn't have been able to relate to it. So that's why I didn't want to bring it up. And my really close immediate family and a handful of close friends know a little bit about the miscarriage. They don't know the extent of it all. They know a little bit. And I haven't, I'm quite on social media. So on my Instagram, I share a lot about Luca. And I love talking about him. Like, I will talk about him all day, every day. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come on to with you guys, is just to speak about him. But I haven't shared anything about the miscarriage. And I don't know why I haven't. I haven't shared it.
I had that feeling when I had my miscarriage. Well, Nicole knew the day of because I remember it was a Sunday evening and I was just about to get in the bath and I'd gone to the toilet and there was we'd only known a week that we were pregnant, and first pregnancy, and I remember seeing blood when I went to the toilet, and I shouted for my husband, and I was like, I'm just gonna ring Nicole, because if Nicole's at work, which she worked in A&E at the time, I'll just go straight to see her. And you were like, I'm not at work, like, but go, and I know who's on shift, and and it wasn't until the Tuesday, this was a Sunday evening, that it really the pain started to kick in, and it was quite brutal. And I remember completely shutting off and not wanting to tell anybody, because we'd actually told very, very few people that we were pregnant. They give you this sort of 12-week rule,
I know.
and I think it's all personal preference, really, because I wouldn't have been able to keep it a secret for 12 weeks from, like, my mum, for example. My mum and my dad, I'm very, very close to my mum and dad. So we told them quite quickly. And then I sort of then understood why they put this 12-week rule. It's not a rule,
No,
but
I
the
know.
sort of guideline in place, because I thought, I've now got to tell those four or five people that know that I'm no longer pregnant, and I don't want to say those words to anybody, because I don't want to say it to myself. And it took me, I think, other than Nicole, I think about 4, 5, 6 weeks to be able to sort of text my friends. And I had to do it by text because again, I didn't want to say the
I feel
words.
I've done it as well.
Yeah, and I just thought, I'm going to put this in a text message, because I thought I felt so alone during that period that I don't want, if my friends ever go through it, I don't want them to feel this alone. And that's what I did. And I remember one of my friends reached out and said they'd experienced a miscarriage about 6 weeks before I had, and they were still not ready to talk about it, so not a lot of people knew. So it was strange because I'm a talker and I prefer to get things off my chest and speak. And after that loss, I just didn't want to speak about it. So I completely understand your need to keep those cards quite close to your chest. And I think you may find in time, you may not, that it does get easier to talk about that and share that information with others. But again, it's every experience is completely personal, and you may never want to sort of make it common lo knowledge, because then we've spoken about this numerous times on the podcast, Nicole, about you don't want to put other people in an awkward situation because they don't know what to say. So you think, well, if I go round and say I've just had a miscarriage, or something, like traumatic, you then sort of change the tone of the conversation, and then they don't know what to say. And so you do it out of fear of what they're gonna say and
It's
how
made in
they're.
their feelings.
Yes. Yeah, even though you might want to speak about your
I feel
feelings.
like people are already kind of awkward with me anyway, because of losing Luca, what we've gone through, that I'm not myself anymore. I'm not the person I was before we lost Luca.
No.
So I don't want, people are already awkward with me as it is. So I don't want to add any more to that. And I remember even when I had text my immediate friends, I actually called myself a negative Nelly because I was like, I have more bad news. I just feel like I'm just giving people bad news all the time. And I felt so guilty for putting that pain again on my parents, Craig's parents. I was like, I've put them through more heartbreak again. It was just, I put so much guilt on myself
So,
for trying to conceive again, conceiving and then having another loss. I was like, I felt to blame that other people were sad because they're already sad that we lost Luca and now they're sad for us, so because we've had another loss. And we did actually tell our so my parents and Craig's parents, we had told them quite early because we were like, well, we fully there's there we firsthand know that there's no safe point. And if anything, we need more support now than ever. So I think we were only about 6 weeks gone and we had told our parents. And then when we had the miscarriage, I was so angry that we had told our parents because then I had to go and tell them the bad news. But I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful to them because they were so supportive again. They just rallied in, took our girls. The weekend of the February bank holiday weekend when I had to take the medication, a family member came and collected the girls on a Saturday morning and they didn't drop us back, drop them back to us until Monday evening. I spent the whole weekend in bed with Craig miscarrying, essentially, but not successfully, as I do that in air quotes, because I obviously then had to go on to have two DNCs. But our family are so, so supportive and they just, I'm so lucky to have them, but I just feel so guilty for what we've put them through. Even though we didn't put them through this, we didn't choose to lose Luca or we didn't choose to have a miscarriage, but I just carry that guilt
And that's
that
a
they're
re
all
it's a reoccurring
heartbroken for us.
theme. It's a reoccurring theme, this guilt, because I've just put an Instagram post out about Erin's story on episode 12 about how we talk quite a lot about mum guilt, and it's actually a really real thing, and it's quite consistent through a lot of people's stories that they carry some form of guilt, and it's totally misplaced because, nobody should be feeling guilty, but I think that's a product of you trying to find answers for things that there isn't an answer for at
That's
this
what I was just going
point.
to say. Like, I think with me and your story as well, Kira, that because there's been no explanation for the losses of our children, you automatically just blame yourself because there's no other reason. So obviously it's my fault. That's how I felt, still feel, but like deep down, it's not true.
I
But
know.
when there's no other explanation, and when like the medical experts like say to you, well, we don't know why you had a placenta abruption, and we don't know why your waters broke early in my case. And I'm like, well, of course there's a reason. Like, there's a reason for everything. So for them telling us like there's no medical reason, well, I'm just like, whatever. I was like, okay, I don't believe you. And I think my most recent consultant meeting was that they said, like, I know it's hard hearing that there's no reasoning behind what's happened, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a reason. It just means that we don't know of that reason yet. So they've not tested theories, and they've not had enough cases to get like the statistics and stuff. And even though that it sounds daft, it just gives me that little like, oh, okay, like maybe feel a little bit better. Like there is a reason, we just don't know of it yet. And it's like that's obviously hard to hear still, and especially when you're going through like your own grief, it's hard, but it just takes that little bit of pressure off blaming yourself. And for so long, and as you said, even still now, I still do blame myself for what happened with Luca. I blame my body. I resented my body so much. I was like, my body was supposed to protect him and keep him safe. And I feel it was my body that caused him to die. And it took months and months of so much work on myself to finally forgive my body, but also to acknowledge it wasn't my fault. And I was very kind to my body again. And then I had the miscarriage. And I was like, I cannot trust my body. I've lost complete trust in my body now, where I'm just like, you don't have control. We don't really have control over our bodies.
No, and I think that's what is completely scary is that it's, or I think every situation that we've spoken about is, it's just been completely out of our control, and there's been nothing that we could have done to prevent the outcomes. Or I always think, what if I'd have done that? And what if I'd have done this? And this wouldn't have happened. And, if I would have advocated for myself a bit better, or if I'd have pushed the medical professionals. And again, the situations are different, but I'm constantly like, I could have prevented what happened, but then I'm thinking, well, no, because it was completely out of my control, and I think everybody that goes through a trauma and a loss feels that way, like, what could I have done differently? And the feeling of that your body fails you, that's consistent through a lot of stories. I've got a very, very close friend who's struggling to conceive, and she blames herself, saying, my body's not doing what it was designed to do. And I felt like that when I couldn't deliver my daughter. Like, I'm designed to do this. Like, why is my body failing me and it's not working? I think, again, those feelings are quite consistent regardless of what your story actually is and your outcome is. The
And
feelings are the same.
it's so unfair. We've been through so much trauma and we're continuing to put our, torture ourselves and to put ourselves through more trauma by torturing ourselves.
Yes. And I think
We just we
we,
don't
everyone should give themselves a little bit of a break.
break. And people always say to me, be kind to yourself, be gentle to yourself. And I'm like, how do I do that?
Give me an instruction manual on how to do that. But there isn't one.
My GP said to me recently, and I pulled her up on it as soon as she said it, but she said, the world can only give you what you can handle. And I was like, sorry?
No,
Because I
that's,
cannot
and that's a
handle.
GP, bloody
Sorry,
hell,
it
that's
just
one
was my
thing
GP. I
that's,
know,
but she's
I
saying that
know.
because she doesn't know what else to say. That is
What
a
else to say?
classic line of, I'll say something in hopes that it will help, but it's actually
Because I
probably
said
made it worse.
when I pulled her up on it, she was like, "Oh no, Kira, I don't mean that like that. Don't take it the wrong way. I'm just trying." She was trying to compliment me. She was trying to say how strong I am, and she but she kind of made it a little bit worse. She kind of said, like, "I sometimes have some patients come into me and they tell me what they're going through, and I think that they're not going to handle it. But when I look at you, Kira, I think you can handle this." I'm like, "Why? What makes you think that I can handle this?"
It's like, just give her a
What?
shovel to start, keep digging.
Is it because I'm still here? Does that make you think that I can handle it? Because I can't handle any of this, but I have no choice. And it's like that when people say, "You're so strong. I don't know how I'd do it."
Oh, I hate
I have
that.
no choice. We have no
I hate,
choice.
that's the one thing that I used to hate, like
I
people were
hate
like,
people telling me I'm
"Oh,
so
you're
strong."
so strong," and I'm like, "No." Like you say, especially when you've got children already, like prior to your loss, you have no other choice. The only other choice is unthinkable. And it's like,
And is it unfortunately when you get to that point that that's when they think you can't handle it? Like when my doctor, so when my GP said the world only gives you what you can handle and you can handle this, it's because I haven't gone that far yet. Like it's
Yeah,
Or
it's like
when
it's.
people say, and I don't want to make this a fashion episode and what people say the wrong things, but when people, because I have got Mila and Gracie here, people tell me, you're so lucky you have Mila and Gracie and focus on them. And I'm so glad you have them. And, I'm like, well, which one of your children would you get rid of then? I'm so grateful to have them, but I should have three here
That
or
doesn't
four. Four.
negate, it doesn't negate the
Yeah.
loss that you've had, and it frustrates me that, because I hate the word lucky. I hate it because it's a turn of phrase more than anything, but the word lucky, it's like people say to us, you're lucky your daughter survived. And I'm like,
Oh.
yes, but I can't disagree. I can't, like, what other phrase would we
I know.
use? And I'm thinking, no, what happened to my daughter was completely preventable, right? And that makes me angry. So the fact
Yeah.
that she is here, I hate the
Doesn't
word
take away
lucky.
what you've gone through.
No, and
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, it's not lucky, because what happened shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So that was very unlucky what happened to her. So I'd rather it say unlucky in the respect that she suffered that trauma than lucky that she survived it. And it's like, of course, like, I'm grateful that she's here. Like, you can't even put that into words, that how grateful you are that, she came through the other side. But then I'm like, that doesn't negate how angry I am
Yeah.
on the other side
And it's
that she's.
also, it's dismissing your trauma. It's dismissing what you've gone through, because then you're thinking, oh, I shouldn't really be focusing, or I shouldn't be thinking about everything that we went through because she's here. Let's just forget about it all because she's here and I'm so lucky that she's here. It's just, it's taken away what you've gone through when people say that. Focus on the fact that she's here, or focus on the children that you have already here.
Exactly. And at
Like,
that say it's that's the comparison I was trying to make, is whether you're talking about the child that suffered the trauma and has got through it, or whether you're referring to the children that you've got at home, the two things are completely separate, in terms of you going through that trauma or that loss. And a lot of people, like you say, it comes from not knowing how to provide comfort, or saying the right thing and providing support. That's where those sort of phrases come from, out of complete naivety and lack
And I
of
will admit,
knowledge.
I was one of those people as well. I get my eyebrows done off a girl who I she used to be used to be on Snapchat. She used to have a big kind of a bit a large following on Snapchat. And I knew it was a long time, well, it wasn't a long time ago. I think it was 8 years ago. She had lost her baby boy. He was born prematurely and he passed away a couple of weeks later. And then I walked into the salon years later and I recognized her and she started doing my eyebrows and I've been going to her for ages. And I never brought up her baby boy because I'd upset her by bringing him up. I was one of those people who either didn't bring it up or didn't know what to say or said the wrong thing maybe. So I never brought it up. She was actually one of the first people to reach out to me when Luca passed away. And I messaged her again, apologizing for never bringing up her baby. And it's unfortunate that you have to go through what we went through to know how others feel.
And we've said, hopefully on the podcast, and Nicole obviously knows better than me in terms of what people have said that have brought upset and anger, and what people have said that have provided, like, support. But this is what this podcast is also about as well, that people can take a little bit of education from it and say, actually, I shouldn't say that. Or, because Nicole, you said it's better to say something than nothing at all, right? Which is a good thing to take away from it. It's good to acknowledge. And you've said that people have, like, not wanted to say, like, Luna's name, and that's quite difficult. So it's these stories and these discussions can give people a little bit of education on what to say and what not to say.
Yeah.
Just for a pure example, another friend of mine has just had her second baby, and originally she was due on my daughter's birthday. So, and then it got shifted by a couple of days, and we were like, oh, I'm not sure when she's going to come in. I had a feeling something wasn't right because, you know, we text quite regularly, and she was due sort of at the end of Feb, and we'd set a date for her to come for dinner. And she was like, look, like if I can't make it, like last minute, I'm really, really sorry. And I'm like, this is, I was like, yeah, understandable. Like it was about 11, 12 days before a due date. So I was like, obviously, you can text me 2 minutes before and it's not a problem, you know, not going to be a problem. But I just thought, something's going on.
Something else, yeah.
Something's going on. And she was like, oh, I've had a really tough week, but I'll fill you in when I see you and things like that. And if she listens, she'll know who I'm talking about. I always have to be careful. And then I got a message. It was 2 days before she was due to come for dinner. So this was the Saturday. She was due to come for dinner on a Sunday, and she was due to come for dinner on the Tuesday. And I got a message with a picture, or several pictures, that she had an emergency C-section. Baby was here, but he was in an incubator, and he looked just like my daughter when she was born. Like it literally was like a carbon copy of that image. She said that like he'd been rushed off, and like she didn't see him for like 4 hours, and it really triggered me because it was so similar to the experience that I had, and all I felt was this like sort of overwhelming sympathy for her because I was like, I'm so sorry that this has happened to you, and I completely understand. And that's all I felt. It's like, that's all I wanted to say to you is, I'm so sorry that you've had to experience this. And it made me be able to communicate with her on a different level. Like if what happened to us hadn't happened, or, you know, I hadn't had any children or whatever, I don't know whether I would re have responded in the
Way you
same
did.
way. And it's a horrible education to go through, but it's an education nonetheless, I would say. So if anyone's listening, this is what you can take from it.
I actually had a similar situation as well. My 11-year-old daughter, I had found out that her play school teacher recently had a placenta abruption and lost her beautiful baby boy. And I haven't spoke to this girl in a long time since my daughter was in play school. And I had an urge to reach out to her. And we have some mutual friends. So a mutual friend had said, Kira has offered her number. Do you want it? And she responded and she was like, yeah, please let me give it to me. Because I remember in those early days just wanting to speak to someone who has gone through this, because you really feel like you're the only person who's gone through it. You feel like you're the only person in the world who's gone through what you've gone through, and you do get some. And I know what we're saying about the wrong words to use, but there is some comfort in knowing someone else gets it. That I can reach out to them. Now, I was a little bit overwhelmed the other day when we were at that the group of bereaved moms, when the mom had said to me, "You're the longest bereaved, Kira. Tell us if it's okay." I was like, "Oh wow,"
And it still feels
because
fresh.
I, yeah, and I find myself looking for someone else for support. Like, you know, those who are longer in the journey, I look at them going, "Tell me it gets okay," and I'm that person now. And I was just a bit like, but they made me kind of, asking that question made me realize I have gotten a little bit stronger. You know, I'm not in the early days of the raw, in-depth, like grief really is like Waves. Some
Yeah.
days you are paddling along, and then some days you are, it's a tsunami.
Yeah.
And I, 11 months down the line, I still have days like that. Tsunami
Yeah.
days or days where I'm just paddling my feet.
Yeah, 100%. It's like I say, I can't sort of relate in those. Oh, Nicole's logged off. I can't sort of relate in those terms, but me and Nicole have spoken in depth on many, many episodes about how time doesn't heal and it doesn't get easier. You just find new ways to cope. And that is the best way to describe it. It could be 10 years down the little line. There's not going to be a day that goes by that you don't miss Luca every single minute of every single day, whether it's the day after or 10 years. So it doesn't get easier. You just find ways to cope. And, I know Nicole, if she logs back in, has always said that her other daughter has been a source of focus, and she wouldn't know, she doesn't know where she would be
I feel that too.
if her daughter was not at home and she had to sort of carry on for her daughter. And so she will massively relate to your situation of having two young girls at home, and it's quite difficult because you're maybe in a slightly different situation than Nicole in terms of the ages of your children when you lost baby Luca, because they are old enough to sort of comprehend, maybe not fully, but understand the sort of the experience that you went through, and that he went to heaven, and where Nicole's daughter was only two at the time. So I think that was quite. I don't know whether they thought it was easier because she didn't comprehend at the time. But yeah, that's more for Nicole to sort of comment on. But I remember her saying that it is probably easier that her daughter didn't understand, because then they don't carry that grief as well.
I have wondered that too. Would it be easier if Mila and Gracie were younger? But then I'm also so I feel lucky or grateful that they were at an age where they're gonna remember Luca and they're gonna be able to talk about him. So when me and Craig pass on, they will be able to talk about Luca and remember him and tell their kids and their grandkids the stories of them playing with him. If they were much younger, they wouldn't have those memories. They wouldn't remember him. They probably wouldn't really talk about him the way that they are going to now. And he's part of our everyday life. So, as I said, it was my daughter's birthday yesterday, and she had an 11th birthday party, and she only invited girls to her party, and they were bowling. But she said there was only two boys allowed to come. One was her dad, and the other was Luca. Like he's part of our everyday. They talk about him every day. They have pictures of him in the room. He's just pictures of him all over the house. His nursery is still as is. We haven't done anything to his nursery. It's actually really heartbreaking now. Obviously, it's heartbreaking the whole time, but his wardrobe is full to the brim. I very rarely open his wardrobe because it's just so difficult to, but most of the clothes that I have in there, they actually probably wouldn't even fit him now. He's outgrown. The time has outgrown. And that's just a, I don't know if I can swear, but it's a bit of a
You
head
can.
fuck,
Yeah, you can swear. You can say whatever you like.
it just messes with your brain that he wouldn't even be in any of those clothes that are in there. And I'm a very organized person, so I had an outfit bought for him for Christmas. I actually had one for St. Patrick's Day, and again because I knew he was going to be a boy, I was able to. Anything that I seen in his age that was on that or that sorry not in his age, but if I seen something on sale, I was like, oh, that would be perfect for when he is 6 months, so I'll buy that now. I had an Easter outfit bought for him, and it's I can't believe that we're at the point that we're at now. We're 11 months down the line, and it's just as heartbreaking as it was the day he passed away.
Of course. Oh, you were back with us, Nicole.
Yeah, so sorry.
You're just in around now.
Honestly, I am literally
Still flustered as
useless.
well.
Oh, we're running around like, where's the charger?
Can't believe it wasn't in
Honestly.
plugged in, like
Oh,
to begin
God.
with.
Well, it was, it just wasn't charging.
Oh
Because I brought it from work as well, so I've not even got another spare one at home. So I'm so sorry, but I'm
that's
back.
all right.
I never even thought of signing in on my phone.
That's all right. She's texting me going, should I ring you and you can put me on loudspeaker? I was like, no, that'll interfere with the
Told you I'm not good at technology. Oh, I'm so sorry. That was very rude of me.
We were just talking about the fact, and I can't relate to this, so this is why we said that it's something that you can have your input on, is the fact that you don't know what you how you would have coped if you hadn't have got your other daughter, and how it's very, very different in terms of your grief, and the ages of your children as well also plays a factor, because
I'm
Lila was
so
only
sorry,
two.
Lila's screaming again. Oh my
Oh,
God, we're not doing very well
you're not
here.
doing very well again.
Sorry,
Just joys of
Wanda. I
parenting.
know. I am so surprised that my neither one of my girls have came in here. Now they probably would be in bed by
Yeah.
well, you never know. But I'm
Well,
so surprised I've gone this long without them coming in.
I'm getting text messages from my husband saying I'm going to bed. So
Oh.
that's fine.
Sorry, I have probably kept you so long. I don't know if you've
No,
ever
no, no, no. No,
been this
and
long.
these, people say, oh, your podcast shouldn't be longer than like 30, 40 minutes. And I'm like, you can't put
Put a
the
time on someone's
topics.
story.
No, and you can't put a time limit on these types of stories, because everyone has a different experience, and they're very sensitive topics as well, like we always say in our sort of intros. So we tend to do an intro to the episode and sort of recap very, very briefly before playing the episode, as you'll know because you've listened. And you just can't you can't put a time limit on that, and you can't cut key pieces of information. I could edit this down, and I could completely edit this down to 45 minutes, but you're cutting, that's just a disservice to you. It's a disservice to Luca, and your family, because every part of the story is important. So however long it takes to communicate that story, that's how long it takes. And I think the people that are listening to this podcast aren't listening for a 10-minute, 20-minute snapshot. Someone's going to be listening because they've got a vested interest in wanting to listen, whether it's they are coming off their own experience and they need the added support, or it could be that they've had a friend or a family member that's gone through a trauma and they want to maybe connect and educate themselves. And there's going to be many different reasons why people dial in. It's not going to be a podcast that people dial in to get, again, enjoyment's totally a wrong word, or
No,
any
I know,
laughs.
but
It's not a comedy podcast, or it's horrible to say, it's not a feel good podcast. It's a podcast where people will find comfort, and education, hopefully.
I think when people listen to your type of podcast, it's to either seek support or learn how to support somebody else.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we're here. And those are the two main reasons, To be fair, people do tend to get a laugh when we can't operate technology, or Nicole runs off about
Oh,
six
Nicole's
times
running
during
off
an
every
interview,
5 seconds.
or losing a charger and dialing out. But these things happen, and it's all
Just
we're
makes
just
it so
real.
much more real life and
So
so
much
much more
more real life.
relaxed as well. And I, yeah.
Yeah, we have techie issues all the time, and we swear and we say things we shouldn't, and
We laugh at the wrong things, but
yeah, there's certain things where we
I
go, we
still
really
worry
shouldn't laugh
about that.
at that.
I know. I still worry about saying the wrong things to, or actually, I said to Craig, We went for dinner on Friday night, and I was saying about how lovely it was meeting with those moms. And I said, there's something playing on my mind though that I said today that I don't know whether it's they took it the right way, but one of the moms had asked me if I've ever met anybody whose baby has survived HIE who has severe cerebral palsy. And I said, no, I haven't. I said, but I work in that area and I see clients with severe cerebral palsy. And I did say, as much as I would have taken him home, and I'm so qualified to look after him because I'm qualified in that area, but I'm also his mom. I even saying it again makes me feel so guilty, but a part of me thinks he done us. Him not surviving, he kind of done us a favor in a way, and I don't even want to like saying that, but I don't think we would have had, I never would have been able to relax because I would have just thought I would have been thinking he's gonna die now, he's gonna die now, and I came away from meeting the moms and I was thinking about me saying that and I was like, why did I say that? How did I say that? That essentially my child dying was the best thing for us because it's not, it wasn't. But I hope they knew what I meant. And I know what I meant, but I just couldn't believe, it was what later on when I was thinking about it, I was like, I didn't, I hope, I didn't come across the way I wanted it to come across. So I do worry about saying the wrong things and not knowing how to support someone else. I had a friend recently, well, shortly after I lost Luca, she'd had a miscarriage. And I wanted to support her so much, but I just didn't know how. And at the time, I could barely support myself. It was during the summer, so I still was in a really bad place. And I felt so guilty that I couldn't support her.
And I think you shouldn't feel that guilt because, which is easy for me to say, but you were not able to support her because of your own grief. It wasn't that you were maybe uneducated in, you would have been able to if, you weren't dealing with your own grief. So, and that's the sad reality is that everyone has something that they're grieving. And I think just knowing you've got that support and somebody's there, if you just want to sit in silence, you're there. And your friend will have known that, you'd be supporting her. And just going back to when you said about what you've just said in that bereaved parents group and how they would perceive you, I think they will all understand as well because they'll have been in that situation where they've probably said something and they've gone, should I have said that or should I have worded it a bit differently? And again, all of these feelings are completely normal. And this is what we keep saying on the podcast is that the feelings are normal and, nothing that you feel is wrong. And you have to sort of own your own feelings. And that's really, really difficult and say, no, it's valid for me to feel this way. And all of the feelings that you have communicated today are all valid and they don't make you sound crazy or stupid or
No.
anything like that. It makes you human and it makes you a
Yeah.
mom. And I just know, I personally, your story has touched me more so than many of the stories that we've had, just maybe because of the similarities in it.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate you sitting down with us and sharing your story and telling us about Luca. And we hope that you've enjoyed. Again, there's that word, enjoyed.
I know. No, I have. I really enjoyed sitting down with you both and talking about Luca. And I wish we never, the three of us never went through what we went through. And we wish we never had to talk about it. And but I'm so glad that I got to do this with you, with both of you. And I feel honored. And I was a little bit starstruck when you talked.
I don't know. Oh gosh. Oh, I wouldn't go that far, but thank you. No.
But yeah, thank you so much for having me and letting me talk all about Luca, and because I
No.
will talk about him until I can't.
Yeah, and we, like I say, we just so appreciate you sitting down with us. And it is hard to get emotional and sort of show those emotions, and but that's what makes it real. And and it is real, and people need to understand those emotions. So thank you so much for dialing
No
in.
problem. Thank you
And
both. No worries.
I know it's like 10:30 and everyone wants to go to bed, but I was just saying, Nicole, that we could edit this down, but it, like you say, it's a disservice to do so. And
Yeah, no. Apart from my bits where I keep running off, you can take
no, but
that
that's
out.
no, but we carried on talking, so it's
Yeah.
fine, it's fine. And we just
Yeah.
said it's real parenting, it's real life,
It's
and this is
yeah, well,
exactly
yeah.
what we're communicating. So
Exactly.
yeah.
And it's a parenting podcast as well, we're
Exactly.
and that's just part
And
of
it's typical that she's woke up like what, four
parenting.
times in 2 hours, little monkey. Then
Maybe
she should go pot.
maybe she should have just kicked Richard to wake up.
I did just go downstairs when I was looking for a charger and I'm like, Richard. He's
That's
like, he's snoring
Jesus.
again now. I'll just leave him there because it means I can go to bed and spread eagle in bed.
I
Gosh,
know when I
like.
go to bed, Craig's got to be the one spread eagle in bed snoring, and I'm gonna have to try
Try and
and
go
get
to
in
sleep.
beside him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think we're all
yeah.
gonna log off to sleeping husbands, I think.
Yeah. Steve will definitely be in bed,
Well,
won't
he's already
he?
texted me. He already
Yeah, I was
texted
gonna say.
me 40 minutes ago saying I'm going to bed. I'm like, I've not texted him back, which
No.
is wrong of me, but I text you back
Oh.
when you're having techie issues, but not my husband when
Not
he's
your
going to bed.
husband. Oh
But
no.
well,
Oh,
thank you so
lovely to
much
meet
again,
you.
Kira, to and
Yeah, no
we'll
problem. Thank you
reconnect as
both.
well, and maybe we'll do a bit of a check-in episode
Yeah, definitely. I'd
in
love
the
that.
future. And it's always good to stay connected, so thank you so much.
No problem. Thank
Yes.
you both. Thank you both for everything that you do as well. I'm so grateful to have you guys to listen to and
Oh,
yeah.
that's lovely. Thank
It is
you. Much.
lovely. Thank you. Thank you again to Kira for sharing her story with us on episode 13 and 14. If anyone out there would like to share their story with us and feature on the podcast, this is the way you can get in touch. Email us at hello@looktothemoonpodcast.com or send us a message on Instagram. Our handle is Look to the Moon Podcast.